Welcome, Third Rock listeners, to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo, Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller and the Fusion Creative Brands. And each week, I have the privilege of speaking with extraordinary leaders and entrepreneurs who are reshaping the way industries work. These conversations go way beyond the surface to explore the core philosophies, the lessons, and the challenges that define the brands that we admire today. And one of the greatest rewards of this podcast is the opportunity to share the insights of some of the brightest minds in business, people who are passionate about pushing boundaries and redefining what's possible. And as I always say, the stories we tell are the brands we build. And this show is a testament to the power of that concept. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Branding Laboratory. I am your host, Devo. It's good to be back. Had a bit of a break last week from recording shows and took some time off, went to the beach, played little sand volleyball, watching my daughter play soccer at Wilmington, and just back, rest, reset, ready to rock and roll. I have a really cool guest today, as usual. Her name is Jenny Townsend, and she built a brand. She created a platform for self-expression, confidence, and growth for people of all ages. She is the founder. Jenny is the founder of The Music Compound. It's a performance-based music academy that's not just about music. It's about transformation. She's a best-selling author. She's a keynote speaker, and she's a podcast host who believes that how we show up in life, marriage, and business starts with one thing: communication. I'm really big on communication. If you've known me for a while, I'm one of those dudes that is very over-communicative, and I will send you a text message. And if I don't hear from you in 2 hours, I'm going to be like, bro, 2 hours, what's going on? I need to hear back from you on something. We're going to talk a little about communication and how she has built one of the most successful music academies in the Southeast, one that has earned a bunch of different awards and shaped a bunch of different lives. And she did it by owning her lane, leading with heart, and focusing on what actually moves people, the experience. So there's a couple of takeaways from that. She is becoming her own niche. She is creating an experiential session, which is everything. And she's making an impact, transformation, children's, parents, all sorts of lives, using music as the centerpiece for that. So we're going to talk a little bit about what she's done, what she's doing, the impact she's making, and we're going to dig into the anatomy of what an identity-driven brand actually looks like, and the discussion around one that intersects this idea that I play around with on a regular basis: personal growth, professional success, and how the two go hand in hand. And she's a mom, she's got children, and just being able to manage all of that and balance all of that, I speak from experience, it can be a complete mindfuck from time to time. And keeping your hand on the pulse of it on a regular basis without going off-road and losing control, it's a 24/7 job sometimes. And if you don't have systems in place, if you don't have good people in place, and most importantly, if you're not passionate about what you're doing and strategic about that passion, then you can fizzle out really quickly. So I'm excited to learn what she's doing to stay in that space and ahead of the curve. And I'm going to just dive into some deep and meaningful conversations with her. And hopefully, I think for today's show, what you're going to take away from this episode really centers around balance, understanding your niche and how you create your own, and that intersection between personal and professional, and why it's really important to focus on who you are as an individual first and foremost. I think we're going to dive into a little bit of the challenges of building a brand. She has multiple audiences, so it's really interesting to see how she's played that out in both her branding and her marketing, and what happens when you lead with vulnerability, because she's really vulnerable and transparent on her social and in her communications. And let's just see what that looks like and the impact it's had. All right, so stay tuned for this, and let's go ahead and bring her into the show. And then I'll jump straight into it. Yeah, it does sound really good. It's a lot quieter than it was before, but nonetheless, let's do this. All right, so my guest today, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Brand Laboratory. If you've listened to any episodes, you know that we're just going to have a candid conversation. I want to get to know you. My audience is mostly entrepreneurs, so anything you can share with us on how you've built your business, how you've built your personal life. I'm really big on and keen on some of the stuff you've talked about on the personal development side first, because I'm a firm believer in if your personal is out of whack, then your business is going to just follow suit eventually. Like, you can only run that race so long. I've done for the last few years, spent a boatload of time just really focusing on my own personal development and self-awareness and how I show up in the world, and really taking a hard look at, dude, are you really doing the best thing, being the best version of who you could possibly be right now? So I love your take on that. You run a music school. You're not a musician. I think it's funny because I coach my daughter's lacrosse team. Not that this is a direct parallel, but I coach my daughter's lacrosse team in high school. And it's pretty high level lacrosse. I've never played lacrosse in my life. And so I'm a student of the game. I just copious YouTube videos and reading books and talking to other coaches and starting to build a little program over here. But how did you get into music, and how have you managed not being a musician, but getting into the music business?
Yeah, so it basically was a major obstacle in my life. I was selling real estate in the mid-2000s when the market crashed. And I had an associate's degree, which in my early 20s, my parents were like, you need to finish the degree. You're going to need this degree. We're going to pay for it. If you don't go now, we were not going to pay for it in the future. And I was like, I've got this. I'm going to do real estate. And I never really wanted to go to college. I only went to college because that's what my parents wanted me to do. And all my friends were going to college. I wanted to just get out the gate, sell real estate, be an entrepreneur in my early 20s. But my parents said no. So anyways, long story short, when the real estate market crashed, I only had an associate's degree and no one would hire me, because in that time you needed to have a 4-year degree to apply for most jobs. Even though I could outwork, outsell, I just had so much drive and ambition. But unfortunately, I needed that piece of paper and that degree to actually apply for many jobs. So I went back to school late 20s, and it was in my final semester of my bachelor's degree when the class project in final semester to get your diploma and required us to develop a business plan utilizing all the courses. And simultaneously, I was working at restaurants trying to pay my mortgage, because at the same time when the market crashed, it was really hard for me to make ends meet. So I started waiting tables, and I was surrounded by musicians that wanted a place to jam, wanted a place to connect. And so I decided to take this garage warehouse idea of creating a business for these musicians to rent out by the hour and make that a business plan. I quickly realized they had no money. They didn't want to pay for space. And so that's when I went back and I just reflected on my childhood. My parents always invested time, energy, and money in me. And when I was working for my dad early in my 20s, I met a young woman. She was 27, owned a mansion, had a Mercedes, boat. She just had everything. And I said, what do you do? And she said, I own a cheerleading school. So in my early 20s, I knew I was going to have a child-based business. I just didn't know what it was. So fast forward back to my late 20s, final semester of college, when I realized musicians had no money, I was like, oh, wait a minute. This is the child-based business I was meant to create. And so I created a business plan for a music school that was cool. It was innovative, didn't have a curriculum, and I had never taken a music lesson in my life. So I had no idea what the rules were. And so I just started creating this business plan and graduated college. And around the same time I met my now husband, and he was like, so you're going to get your master's? I'm like, no, one day I'm going to open this music school. So that was 2009, 2016, decided to leave corporate America and launch my business. And we're in our 10th year now. So it really started as an obstacle, and I just basically turned it into an opportunity. And here we are.
Yeah, I don't know that it was an obstacle. I think that you're an opportunist. I actually wrote that word down. And it's funny how opportunists think. They don't really see it as obstacles. They always see it as an opportunity to create something. So I appreciate that. I want to unpack two things you said in that conversation. The fallacy of parents that are products of the system, and the fallacy of the system that teaches the parents. Because one of the things I see on a regular basis is that it's not necessarily that our parents have ill intentions, but their advice isn't always necessarily the best advice for us. It might have been the best advice for them, but it's not necessarily standard for us, because they're operating from an outdated system themselves, because that's what they were taught. It's like this whole idea of go to school, go to college, get your degree, work in corporate America, sit in a cubicle, yada, yada. The system is broken, plain and simple to me. It is a broken system. I do see that there are glimmers of hope and it's shifting. I guess my first question is, do you agree or disagree with my statement about the system being broken?
Yeah, so I definitely agree. My parents wanted me to go to college because my parents didn't go to college. My parents were entrepreneurs. They owned a lot of different businesses, and that's how I grew up. And so I'm not sure why they didn't just foster that and encourage me to do the family business. However, I was burnt out from the family business by the time I was 18.
What was that?
They owned a window cleaning company. So we used to service all the Publixes and Walgreens in the state of Florida. Not
That is
all.
ironic that they were entrepreneurs, but really were pushing the standardized education. That is interesting. Have you ever had that conversation with them?
I haven't. I think that my parents sent us to private school and all the things. So I think this is what parents thought. And I think at that generation, I'm 40, so this is like 25 years ago. That was the standard. That was the expectation, is you would go to college, because
They're
that's
like,
what.
we're getting our ROI on this regardless. I don't give a shit if you're happy. We're getting our money back on this.
Now, today, I don't believe that anyone has to go to college. Yes, if you want to be a doctor or you want to be an attorney, and there's a specialized, skill set that you need to gain or a certain degree in order to do that job. But I definitely preach entrepreneurship to all the teens that I work with today. I'm all about creating a business plan. I was listening to one of your podcasts, the guy James, and I know that you had a lawnmower business. And some of my friends started pool companies in high school, and then they did that, and then they sold those. So, like in early 20s, they were already exiting businesses.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that just wasn't how my childhood played out. I wish it would have been, but my parents really thought they were doing the right thing by sending me to college and doing that. And looking back, every child is completely different. Like when I look at my siblings, all of our paths are different. So it's unfortunate, but at the same time, I'm still an amazing person. I'm still successful. And I just had to take a detour and spend a lot of their money. Actually, wasted a lot of it too.
Yeah, I don't mean to. I don't mean to shortchange who your parents are. I didn't, if that's how it came across, forgive me. What I meant to say is that I think parents, your parents, it sounds like, and mine as well, were brought up in a system that sort of taught that sort of methodology, which is really very fixed. I have a really nice frozen camera face going on. That's wonderful. What happened here?
And I think if my parents did go to college, like a lot of my friends' parents, maybe it would have been a little bit different. But so, anyways, so I mean, I got a nice little experience and I learned a lot of skills. And I definitely, when I went back the second time, I was more determined. I was actually caring about the grades because I was the one paying for college that second time, which was hard too when you're like in the process of short selling a house and you have no money and you have to get this degree to better yourself. But those are some great lessons that I learned at the age of 24, 25, 26 about my first house at the age of 24. So I think we mature as we grow in our 20s, a really impactful time, and they can make or break you. So I would say that my 20s made me super, super strong and independent, where it allowed me to be successful.
Yeah, sorry, I had a froze face on there, so I want to go back to that thought that I was trying to get out before I froze myself. I didn't mean to shortchange your parents or anyone's parents for that matter, because we're only operating from the construct that our worldview is able to. But when I say the system is broken, for me, when I look back at it now, and it's obviously hindsight's 2020, I don't think that the system is designed to teach people to be critical thinkers or entrepreneurs or to step into a world that takes a lot of courage and a lot of different variables. And I'm not saying that college isn't an ideal opportunity. I think there's a lot of benefit from going to college. Personally, I encouraged my daughter to go to college only from the standpoint of all the different opportunities that she would have presented to her, from traveling abroad to working for professors to really intelligent people to doing internships to having all these like community activities that she would have never gotten if she had not. So from that standpoint, I think it is a brilliant idea. But I'm curious your take on school in of itself, because I still have younger kids and they're still in high school right now, and I still look at sort of the fallacy of what they're doing. And it just basically it creates a construct that is the exact same for every single person. So people that might be musically inclined, or people who might be more technical, or people who might be more tradesmen or tradeswomen or whatever it is, there aren't programs. I know there's magnet schools that create that, but the general public school system itself is not designed to handle that sort of output. It's just put on your blinders and follow the same track as everyone else. And that's what I mean when I say I think the system is broken.
Yeah, so I run a child-based business. So I have about 425, maybe 30, 430 students that come to our music school on a weekly basis. So I'm surrounded by a lot of children. I don't have my own children either. Most people think, as a business owner of a music school, that I am a musician, I have an education background, and I have children. None of those apply to me. But what I do see, just based on my experience in the past 10 years of working in this industry, is that a lot of parents have already a plan for their child, where what sports they're going to do, what they're going to do as far as after school activities, what school, what middle school they're going to, what high school, what college, what they're going to do as a career. And what I want to say to those individuals is take a pause and really ask your child, what do they want? And I know firsthand, like my husband really wanted to be a writer and an artist. And if you were to speak to his parents as like recently, oh, he's an amazing writer. He could have done anything. At that time, when he was a child, they were telling him that he wasn't going to make a living doing those things. So I always want to tell parents, hey, pause and ask your child, really, what do they want to do? Because at the end of the day, if they're able to be passionate and create the life that they want to live, they may not care about having major expenses or high quality lifestyle or like really expensive cars. They just may just want to be happy. And I think if we lean into what's going to make our child happy long term, we're going to have less issues with mental health, depression, anxiety, drinking issues, addiction, and all those things. So I think retraining and giving parents the permission to allow their children to fail and not to judge them and not to compare them would be super beneficial to the future generations. And I think that's a really big mind shift for parents because at the end of the day, they want their parents to be more successful or their children to be more successful than they are. And at the end of the day, your child may or may not be as successful. We all come from different upbringings. If you think about my childhood and your childhood is much different than the kids today. So I'm not a parent. I can't imagine being a parent. And that has got to be the hardest job on the planet. But I do think if we leaned into what our children really are passionate about and let them select the schools, I just ran into a woman the other day. Her child is really into music and musical theater, and we have a fantastic visual performing arts middle school. Maybe not in the best area of town, but they have a lot of opportunities and it's a really great school. It just has a bad reputation because of where it's located in town. She's sending her child to another school, which is a charter school, which is an amazing. The kids that are going to that charter school are most likely going to be super successful because, first of all, the school system, the people that are there that they're connecting, they're networking with, and they're building those friendships with, it's going to be much different than that performing arts school. So she has the best intentions for her child long term because she wants her child to be super, super successful. But in the day, her child doesn't want to go to that school. She would be much happier, have more confidence, be more fulfilled, and would be successful as a human being and be probably happier long term if she were to go to the performing arts school because she'd be able to do what she loves versus being in this area at a really pivotal moment in middle school and not being happy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. There's so many things, and I want to work backwards. First of all, before we go any further, we should start a parenting school because I am a parent, and I've always said that parents should be required to go to a parenting academy on a regular basis just to refresh their parenting skills. Because I am a father, I raised my kids basically by myself, and I have no idea what I'm doing most of the time. I'm just making this stuff up, which is why I've made a really conscious effort over the last few years to try to surround myself with really qualifiably inspiring people just so that I can learn from them in different various ways. But parents don't know. I think a large majority of them, and I talk to my friends on a regular basis about this, like we literally don't have any idea what we're doing half the time either. We're basically kids having kids. I had my first child when I was 30, and that's hardly grown up or wise or experiential in any way, shape, or form. And I think we make a lot of mistakes with good intentions. And I want to call out that one in particular. I got my children involved in sports early because I was an athlete. I never forced them to play sports, but I always exposed it to them because there's a whole lot of life lessons from sports, and that's a different podcast. But I do recall in that journey from YMCA all the way up to high level club, like really high level soccer, which my daughter played, there were a lot of parents out there who were like, "This is it. This is my kid's ticket." And I was like, "Bro, your kid is not that good. They're not going to play college soccer. There's 0.0001% of these kids who are actually going to go on and do something." And I remember one, I'm not going to say names, but there was one story in particular where the dad had asked me to train his daughter. I was a soccer player as well, and so I did a lot of coaching, like private coaching. And one athlete in particular, she was just average at best, average at best. And her dad had this magnificent vision for her getting a D1 scholarship and going on to play. And he would take her to everything. If US women's soccer was in town, they were there. He would get her, he gave her all these opportunities, but she just really wasn't interested in playing soccer. And when I was coaching her, it became very apparent that she didn't really want to be here. And in multiple conversations, she told me, "I'm only here because my dad's making me be here." So I actually had to have a converse. I had a candid, this is the true story. I pulled the dad aside one day after a session and I was like, "Man, I don't really know the best way to say this because I know you're super all in on this, but I don't really feel like your daughter wants to be here. She's not motivated. She's not inspired. And to be frank with you, I don't think she really has any interest in even continuing doing this." And dude, this guy was belligerently freaked out by this, offended. You would have thought that I had punched him in the face, like just like hardcore. "Who do you think you are to tell me this?" And I was like, "Man, like, this dude needs to go to parenting school because he is not." He was like living vicariously through his daughter's vision of his own, that sort of thing.
And what ends up happening too is that the parents burn them out to where, like, about junior, senior year is where they're already burnt out from it, where the time is they actually could get the scholarships to go to the next level. But because of the pressure and because, and I understand, like, you want to dream big. And I'm an entrepreneur. I dream really big for my company. And sometimes I dream so big and share that dream so much. And I've kind of forced that on people where they're like, oh, that's too much for me. And so I think just finding the right balance, but making sure your child is still having fun and really
Yeah.
passionate about it really is going to keep that love and that passion long term. I think at the end of the day, everybody just wants to do a great job. And there's a lot of life lessons that we learn. And it's really hard for our children to understand what we're talking about and understand the larger picture too, because they're young. And I think that there's a lot of pressure applied. And if we remove a little bit of that pressure from our children and from ourselves, there's going to be more happiness. And I think a lot of parents are so busy schlepping their kids all the different places because they want them to be all the things. And what ends up happening is no one really is happy. And I always tell parents, like, pause, lean into the passion, and don't overschedule because remember, you only have so much time with them at home. So make sure it's like genuine and it's happy. And but once again, I'm not a parent. And everyone's like, you don't understand because you're not a parent, but I am in this industry. I do have parents and I do have siblings. And like I said, I can't imagine being a parent. It's one of the hardest jobs. And I feel for them. And at the end of the day, they just want what's best for their child.
Yeah.
Just sometimes they don't understand what they're wanting, though. It's
Yeah.
actually impacting them. And when I think of adults and I think of people like around our age, if you're thinking if they're like in corporate America, they're most likely not happy. They're in jobs that are not fulfilling. They're only working to pay bills. There's a sense of like them having addiction, all these things. And if they could quit their job tomorrow and nobody would judge them, they would.
Well, that's what I meant at the
At least
outset
see
with
the
the system.
judgment.
That's what I meant with the system being broken. And I want to go back to something because I don't disagree with you, but as a father who has raised two teenagers, it's a very fine line that you have to manage. It's a precarious line between giving opportunities, pushing them into those opportunities, because a lot of times kids will not take their own initiative to do that. So you have to be able to find opportunities to present with them so that they can step into it. And sometimes you have to push them off the cliff a little bit to do that. So where I totally agree with you is, rather than pushing them off the cliff and then forcing them to stay down there, give them other opportunities where they can also expand their horizon. So it might not just be soccer. Like, I exposed my kids to dance and to music and to ballet and to taekwondo. And I was like into art school and painting camps in the summer. And like, I always wanted them to see, like, where are you going to step into? Find something that really inspires you. And so I think that for me was, I did that right as a father. So I think that's the one thing is, don't have a vision. Again, this is not a parenting podcast, but if you're a parent, your child should have some say in where they go with this. And it's your job to keep them on track in the different trajectories so they can exposed.
Yeah, and I think and exposure is key. I think exposing your child to a variety of different activities, people with different thought processes and views. And I know a lot of stay-home moms as well, like all during summer, they'll keep their kids at home with them. And their kids want to do art. They're like, they'll just stay home. And I'm like, oh my God, I will pay for the art classes, or I'll pay for the music classes. Just get them exposed. I will say one of my strengths is people. I can talk to anyone. I've never met a stranger. As soon as I meet someone, I can connect with them. And the reason being is because I was in so many different activities, but I was also in so many places where I had to learn to have conversation with others and find a way to connect and have a conversation. And a lot of times, I know a lot of high school students that they can't even order anything when they go out to eat. And that's because they lack the confidence, they lack the social skills, and they have no voice. And I think a lot of times it's because they've been home for way too many hours. So if anyone isn't listening and you are maybe keeping your kids at home for whatever reason, I would say encourage them, whether it's a camp or whether it's a workshop, even if they don't want to go, encourage them because you never know. They may meet their best friend there, or they may be inspired, or they may be encouraged to go again. So,
I don't
anyway,
think
I
it's
know this
just,
is a CEO leadership podcast,
yeah.
parenting con.
I know this is a podcast about conversations of who you are as an individual. And again, I love your point on that, the communication piece is being able to not isolate yourself, but also there's a much more pernicious piece here that you didn't say in that whole little algorithm of yours is social media and phones. And I don't want to go into this podcast on that, but it is a very pernicious aspect that phones and social media have done to children's confidence. Social media communication, being able to have just basic eye contact. Again, not to denigrate anything, because there's a lot of value from social media, and I talked about this on a regular basis. But in a lot of the athletes, especially teens that I work with, They have a really difficult time just looking you in the eye and staying focused for more than 2 seconds. It's always like they're on crack or doing something. And I'm just, and like half of my time of training and focus is like bringing them back into the moment. Is like, this is where we are. Stay here. Have a conversation with me for a minute. But anyway, let's talk about you. You build a business, a really successful business. You're over 10 years now into it. You've written a book. You have a podcast. You have a team, all the while navigating this whole idea of personal growth and marriage. What do you think has been one of the most difficult chapters of your life so far that you look back and be like, this was a defining moment in who I am today?
I would say 2018. So I started my company in 2016, happily married with a dream that I've been dreaming about since 2009.
The
And
dream, the marriage, or the business?
so the dream was always the business. I just happened to find the love of my life and get married and decided to launch that business. So when I started the company in 2016, I was happily married and all about the music school. 2 years into the business, and anyone that started a business knows you've got to be all in, and it becomes your love, your passion. Mine became my whole entire world, and I forgot I was married. And there were signs that other things were happening in my marriage that I could tell the writing was on the wall. I just wasn't ready to face them. But in 2018, I discovered that my husband was having an affair with a coworker, which again, I had suspected it actually since 2015, but I didn't discover it until February of 2018. And that was probably a turning point for me. And once again, another major obstacle. And I loved my company. And I was challenged with, do I keep the company or do I keep the marriage? And I thought I was going to have to pick one or the other. And fortunately, I had a team in place that was capable of running my organization. But of course, I was so in it that I wasn't really releasing a lot of the control at that point. So in February 2018, I found out my husband was having an affair. And at that point, I had to exit my company. And when I did, I left my company in the hands of two relatively new hires, only been working with me for 5 months. One of them had only been working with me 1 month. And basically, I left my company in their hands, and they turned my company from red to black. They took it from old school to new school, and they really just took my company to a new level. And during that time, I had to like work on myself. And I could have pointed fingers at my husband, at the other woman. And I could have been like, divorce, see you later, goodbye, because we had no children. We could easily sell our house, split the assets, and I could be gone. But I decided to pause and take some time for myself to figure out who I was, what did I want, who did I want in my future, and what did my life look like, and what did I want to do in the future. And that became a really amazing journey. It was very hard. There was a lot of anger, there was a lot of tears, heartache, pain, so many emotions. But during that time, from 2018 to like mid 2019, I was really able to really look within and become very self-aware. And I started the self-awareness, and I always say from discovery to recovery, the recovery process, the failure of my marriage. And later, my husband and I were able to get back together, and I was able to find forgiveness. And here we are, 6, 7 years later, and we have a beautiful marriage. But I would say
Let
during
me
that,
pause you there because you're gonna go on a deeper direction than I'm ready to go. I want to go back to the affair because it is worth diving into a minute, and we don't have to get gory. But that takes a lot of courage and a lot of self-awareness to A, find this out, B, have the wherewithal to know that you had a role in it, because not many people are capable of doing that. Most people are going to start pointing fingers, and I can't say that I wouldn't. I don't really know how I would show up with that situation. I have been cheated on before, so I do know how I would show up. We always have a role, right? It takes two people. If you're in a relationship and someone else is cheating on you, A, they might be an asshole, but there's obviously something that you had to do with that in some way, shape, or form. I'm not implying that your husband is one of those. I'm just simply saying. How did you, in terms of just you, Jenny, have the courage to A, see the situation in a more pragmatic level and not have your emotions intertwined with that? And then B, develop the self-awareness to look at this from the outside in and say, okay, what was my role in this situation? Did I have a part of this? Was this exclusively him, or was there something that I was or wasn't doing in this relationship? I'd like you to just break that down if you don't mind a minute.
yeah, I was very involved in my company. It was a 7-day-a-week type of thing, and I loved it. And I wasn't even paying myself at this point, which caused a lot of friction with my husband and I as well. But I was being paid in smiles and impact, and I was turning dreams into reality. And it was just the most amazing time. Like, I really just absolutely loved
Paid in
everything I was
smiles, I like that.
doing. Just loved everything I was doing every single day. So I was very much being told by my family that I need to take care of a man, I need to be present. Everybody could see what was happening, and I could see it too. I just didn't care. I really just genuinely cared so much for my company at that point in time. And I met with a mentor end of 2017, and he had suggested I watch this movie called The Intern, which, if you haven't seen it, it's Anne Hathaway's in it. She starts a company and her husband starts having an affair. And this was a mentor I met for 1 hour, met me for the first time and told me to watch that movie, not knowing me, not really knowing my husband, just listening to me talk at one point. And I didn't watch that movie until way later after discovering the writing was on the wall. Everyone could see what was happening. I just wasn't ready to face it until I actually discovered what was happening. And I didn't actually have the time to discover what was happening until I went on a sabbatical. So another mentor of mine said, "Hey, your business, your life, everything is crashing and burning." And this was in December of 2017, around that time. And he said, "You need to leave your business. And you're going to walk out of your business December 1st, and you're not going to come back till January 1st. And so I walked out of my business for 3 weeks, and that was the best thing I ever did. And during that time, that's when I realized, oh, yeah, my husband's not home. It's 9 o'clock at night. Like, where is he? And then slowly in January is when things started to come out, and then I was actually like able to catch him in that spot. I knew I had a really big role in what was happening, and everybody else knew I had a big role. So there was no point, there was pointing fingers, but at the same time, I really had to take ownership of how I was showing up and how I was contributing to the marriage and how I wasn't contributing to the marriage and how I basically put my entire company and before everyone, before my whole entire family. And that's really hard to accept and to say, because at the end of the day, like I loved everyone and I cared for everyone. I just was so determined. I developed a 135, and I was determined to hit my 5-year goal and have so much dollars in revenue, have so many members, have so many hires. And I had a long-term plan that was going to impact everyone. And my husband, he didn't derail the plan, my husband wouldn't have to work today. My husband could be living on his boat. He could be doing anything he wanted because there was a plan of the success for the company, and I was going to do everything I could to make it happen. And he was on board when he told me to quit my job and start the company. But at the same time, when you're not being fulfilled and you're seeing your partner live out their dream and being so happy, and then they're not making money, but they're so happy, there's a lot of resentment. And then when you have coworkers that validate you, or they're like 22 and they're short little skirt working late with you, it makes it really easy. And then when they pour out their heart, "My wife's never home," then it's, "Oh, I feel sorry for this man." There's so many variables, there's so many things that go into it. So I just had to take ownership of my role, and my husband had to take a lot of ownership too. So it was definitely a joint thing. Like, we didn't want to get divorced. We obviously did not get married to go through this. So there was a lot of therapy and there was a lot of conversations, and we split up and all the things. But at the end of the day, we could remember why we got married, who we married, and we both were committed to making it work. And the fact that there was like a little bit of commitment of making it work, that was enough for us to hang on to it to do the work. Doesn't mean that
Well,
we didn't think about exiting at other times, but.
I'm glad that has a happy ending. And it is, it goes back to that whole idea of balance. If you, especially if you're an entrepreneur and you're running a business, being able to find that balance between running your business, still maintaining your own health, because that's another piece that always falls by the wayside is our own personal health, whether it's weight gain, whether it's stress, whether it's anxiety, not getting to the gym, not getting outside in nature, not taking enough time for ourselves, yada. But then if you have a partnership, so it's being able to find that balance. And it's different for everybody. So it's really, I'm really excited to hear that you have found what's working for the two of you. And congratulations that. That it did not end in divorce. You in Stroke It, which is your book, is that correct?
Yes.
You've really chosen it now on the show at the Brand Laboratory. You've really chosen a pathway to be really open and transparent and willing to share your story openly, which I'm assuming your husband's on board with this, which a lot of people would not be willing to do because there's a lot of shame around that and whatnot, especially for him and especially for how you have responded to it. What made you decide to be more transparent and more honest about what's going on, especially working in this sort of space where parents and children are involved? That's a very delicate proposition that you're managing.
Yeah, and I would say they're still separate worlds. I really haven't merged the two, and a lot of my families don't know what I went through. Actually, most of my staff doesn't even know what I've been through.
They will after this show because this show gets a lot of ears on it.
So for the most part, it was very private. Like, I kept everything very private, and I kept it private for the most part because, number one, as soon as you air your dirty laundry on social, everyone judges, everyone shames, and I always felt like we could make this work. And if we did make it work, I really wanted everyone to still love him and accept him and still honor what we have and believe that it was honest, true love and what we have today. And so through the journey, I had a lot of people shaming me. I had a lot of judgment as well. And I had a lot of people be like, I can't believe you're so successful. You could have any man. You don't. I'm like, listen, this is very common. And as you start talking about it to people, you find out how common it really is. So
Affairs, you mean?
affairs
Oh, yeah.
and inner office affairs
Oh,
too.
yeah.
So through the journey, so once the discovery happened, my immune system shut down. I got really sick. And I had a surgery before I found out everything. And basically, the incisions throughout my body were not healing. And so, for about 6 months, the incisions were just like they were the day after. My body would not heal. I went to infectious disease doctors. I was going to all these. I'm like, what is wrong with me? And so, I went to an acupuncturist, and she's like, we got to heal your mind.
Yeah.
Got to heal your mind and your heart, and then the rest of your body will heal. And that's where she introduced me to journaling. And that's where I started journaling my feelings every single day. I started journaling the process, how I was going through everything, how I was handling it all. And then little by little, a lot of the information I was journaling was like, okay, how this happened. When I spoke with my husband the night that I discovered what was happening, when I said, how and why? And she validated me. She made me feel good. She listened to me. She was present. Like he started naming all these things. And I was like, oh, so she stroked you mentally, emotionally, and physically. And so that was basically the inspiration for the entire book. And when I started thinking about the stroke it concept, I was like, oh, I need to stroke myself. I'm beautiful. I rock. I got this. Stroke my husband. I love you. You're amazing. Thank you for taking out the trash. And then I started thinking as an employer, like stroking my employees, not literally, but validating them so that they feel appreciated and they want to continue coming to work. And so I just started organizing those thoughts. And then that's really like this whole book thing came about, and then the podcast and all the things.
Yeah, and it really centers around what you've done, at least from my point of view, is you've built a personal brand around who you are and not only your business. And it's really important if you are an entrepreneur, part of building a personal brand is finding that balance between transparency and vulnerability. I was like, people connect with that. It's the experience, it's the emotional piece. Again, if you want to build a business around who you are as an individual, you're going to have to share some insights to show to other people that you are real. The struggles you have are the same struggles they have, and that's what people latch on to. So you work in the music industry. You in one of your onboarding documents that you sent to us, you talked about working with children, working with kids, and sometimes the message gets a little bit muddy in terms of how you present yourself to both of those parties. What has been your strategy for communicating this brand message to both audiences without losing focus and without losing an audience?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, I think just being true to who you are and being vulnerable. So earlier we had talked about sharing the story, and my husband, at first, he was not okay with the story or me sharing it. And then obviously I put it in a book and I've shared it, and it's impacted so many people where we have people coming up to us all the time saying, thank you for sharing. And actually, the one woman that judged me very early on came to me and said, I'm so sorry for judging you, because she was later in the same boat, and she could understand. It's really not that easy to walk out of a marriage that you've been in and someone that you love and care for, no matter how badly they've hurt you. So, really, for me, my messaging is being honest, following your passion, leading with your heart, creating balance, no matter what it is. Like when I think about 2016 and 17, I was on a hamster wheel. 2018, my husband ripped me off that hamster wheel so fast. And I have not gone back to that hamster wheel. I have literally created so much balance and structure in my life to where I serve myself first, I serve my husband secondly, and then I serve others. And so really that's the messaging, is first and foremost to serve yourself so that you can be the best parent, the best boss, the best teacher, the best coach, the best friend, and then you can serve other people to where they're fulfilled and they're happy. Most of my messaging, whether it's with a team member, because I do a lot of personal development with my team, it's all about serving ourselves first. If you are not happy, you cannot be happy for anyone else. If you cannot cheer for yourself, you're not going to be able to cheer for other people. Really, the messaging is really just about stroking yourself and stroking other people. Obviously, when I'm speaking in the context of the stroke it, if I'm working with my families, I'm not using that terminology, just because it comes off very sexual. And that's the thing, is most people thought my book was about sex, which it's not at all. There is a chapter for your pleasure, but at the same time, it's very much about the people. And so, yeah, I'm not really promoting my personal brand really through my music school audience and things like that. Obviously, I promote the music school wherever I'm at, because that's my love and my passion as well. So it's just navigating. One day, I'll be able to do it all at the same time.
At the end of the day, what problem are you actually solving for with Music Compound? What's the solution that you're providing to
Yeah,
your
well,
audience?
so Music Compound is a place that brings musicians of all ages together. So it's like-minded individuals having a place to call home, a community. So our mission is to inspire, collaborate, and educate. So we're inspiring you to have a passion for practicing and a love for music your entire life, not just during the season that your parents are making you do it, or you have to do it for extra credit or whatever. The collaborative aspect of it is playing music together, creating really great relationships where you can have friendships that will last long term. We have a lot of people that end up meeting at Music Compound, dating, got married, all that cool stuff. And then the education component is there's so many benefits to music education and incorporating in your life, almost so much as like therapy. So Music Compound serves so many things. Our core business is music education, so private lessons, group lessons. We're performance-based. So a lot of the performance-based skills that they're learning is stage presence, confidence, commanding the room. And those are life skills that you can use when you are outside a Music Compound. So whether you're applying for a job, you're doing a presentation at work. So really, that's like the core of what we do. I don't know, we're just turning dreams into reality, whatever that dream may be. It may be just to be able to get on stage, or it may be to write a song, or it may be to play in a band. So we have a lot of adults that come to Music Compound. They've always wanted to be in a rock band, and they attend a jam session and they become in a band, and then they're performing at local breweries and stuff. So it's just such a cool place and so fulfilling. And my entire team, we have a team of 33 people. We all get to do what we love every single day, and we get paid for it, which is bonus.
So it's a membership model. That's how it works.
Yes. Yeah.
So someone like myself who isn't necessarily musically inclined, but I was looking for community, or I was looking to get in a band, I would pay like a gym membership, a fee to be part of this community. And through that membership, I have access to training, workshops. Tell me a little bit about
Yeah,
that.
so basically your membership fee. So it's an all-inclusive membership. We don't just do this and that. Think of like the YMCA.
Got
You're
it.
paying for the entire Y, whether you use the pool or
Got
not, whether you use
it.
the gym classes or not, or the weights. So for us, you get a weekly lesson, a weekly jam session, monthly concerts on-site and off-site. We have workshop master classes, and then we have these little lounges where you can
Who's
come.
teaching these things?
Music teachers.
So these are people that you're paying to be instructors within the academy, it's or in the compound itself.
Correct. So we have two teams. So we have our front office team, which is sales, marketing, admin, recruitment, all of the things that teachers do not want to do. And then we have our teachers, which is our back of the house. They do everything that happens in the lesson room. So we do the sales, they do the retention. We work together to provide all of the services.
And this is a physical place like the YMCA.
Yes, 10,000 square feet.
That's amazing. Do the members also serve as instructors in some way, shape, or form, or is that not, that's never an option?
So we have an apprenticeship
Got
for
it.
our junior staff.
I
So we
love that.
have kids that turn 14 and they're like, Miss Jenny, can I please work here? And so we put them through an application process, we put them through an interview process, and then they start out working in the lounges.
I love
And
that.
so it's basically drop-off daycare type of stuff. Then they can transition and they can do the front office route, or they can become a teacher assistant. If they become a teacher assistant, they're a teacher assistant for a year to maybe 2 years. Then they can be a group lead teacher. And by that time, they've done it for a couple of years. They're either going to graduate high school and they may go off to college, or they may stay locally for college.
Got
They
it.
stay locally, then they become a junior teacher, which then they can do private lessons at a different rate. And if they go to the front office track, then we're teaching them sales, marketing, admin. And so essentially, these 18-year-olds are graduating, making 15 to 18 bucks an hour. And then they have a killer resume. We write them letters of recommendation for colleges and for jobs and things like
Do you mind if I ask just what does a membership cost? What's a monthly membership for this?
that. Yeah, so our memberships range from like $239 to $415.
And within those different variables, they get access to different things. So it's not necessarily all inclusive for one price. No, or it
Yeah,
is.
they get access to everything for that
So
price.
why, what's the range offer? What's the difference between a
Oh, yeah,
230?
so like a weekly 30-minute versus a weekly 60-minute.
I got it. I got it.
And
And
then
then,
I
sorry,
just
go
wanted
ahead.
to clarify with my junior staff. They make 14 to 17. I said more money, but they start off at like 13 to like $17
They're
an
like, wait, who makes 15 to 18?
hour.
I'm not that person. Something I notice with service brands a lot is that the focus itself is more about the offering rather than lessons, instruments, age groups, et cetera, instead of an outcome. And it sounds like you're in the middle of both. There are service results, but there are also some outcomes because you talked about community, you talked about creativity, you talked about all those pieces. Have you given that much thought in terms of when I show up and get my membership to the music compound, I'm obviously getting physical aspects of it from it, but what is more of the an intangible that they're receiving from it?
Yeah, we have a learning academy. So essentially, we have where all of our teachers have created guitar courses, drum courses. And so, if you are a student of ours, let's say that you can't make it to a lesson today, we have a database of basically videos that are lessons that we can send to you. We also sell like a guitar course, we have a drum course we sell. So, you could just buy like a flat fee and do like an intro course before you actually come into the studio or you just don't live here. We have a lot of seasonal members as well. So they'll come in for a season and then they'll either transition to do online lessons or they'll just pause for a little bit and come back. And we do camps and we do master classes and workshops. So
Let me stop you there, because I guess what I was trying to get at is not just the musical output, so the lessons, the apprenticeship, whatever it is. I'm looking for the intangibles. What are some of the intangibles that I, as a student, especially as a youth, these 18-year-olds or anybody who's coming to this all-inclusive membership, what are they not physically getting from it in terms of, is it courage? Is it confidence? Is
Oh,
it
yeah.
camaraderie? What are some of those other things that
Yeah, I
you've
mean,
seen are spawned from this?
so when we do our annual reviews, passion for practicing, confidence, community, and friendships are the four top reasons why people come to music
Love that.
compound. Lessons are in there, but it's those four top things that the reason they come, and they just see their children come out of their shells. And if people were to move here in the area and their child didn't know anyone but had an interest in music, they come here because they know they can make friends really quickly. Because a lot, because I come from a team sports background. So I did soccer, volleyball, softball, track, 4-H, BMX, bike racing. I did all the things. So a lot of the things that we do are very much like team oriented. So where it's really easy to get them playing music together or like a team. So a lot of our group programming is band related. And I know James had talked a lot about the benefits of being in a band and all the things that he had learned with managing those bands as well. So the same concept is what he was talking about in that podcast when you had him on.
I had a conversation with an individual recently, and I'm switching gears for a minute before we close out the show. This idea of sports as a backdrop and like your development amphitheater. And the individual that I was talking to, he was arguing with me, which wasn't even an argument. I don't really understand why he was so passionate, but he was saying that not everybody could benefit from sports. And that may or may not be true, but I'm very fascinated by the tangible benefits that you receive from having an athletic sports, especially team-based background. And it sounds like you have that. I do as well. And I see all sorts of parallels in how I'm running my business, to my discipline, to my integrity, to my ability to communicate and collaborate with people. Would you take a minute to back up through your childhood and who you were and where you are today? And what role do you think sports itself has played in your success and your core philosophies of who you are today?
Yeah, so first I'm going to start with 4-H. Because it's very much independent, but it's also very team oriented as well. With 4-H, you learn a lot of leadership, you learn presentations and confidence because you have to do a presentation every single year. You also learn the value of budgeting, how much money you're going to feed this animal, how much time you have to allocate to actually get this animal to show at a given time. And at the end of the day, this animal is depending on you. So there's a lot of responsibility of I had to get up at 5 in the morning and go take care of my animals before I got in the shower, before I went to school for the work for school day. And then I would do sports and then I would come home and take care of this animal again. So this person was like, this animal was dependent on me. So you become very much independent and then in charge and responsible for somebody else, which builds a lot of responsibility. And then when it comes to the team sports aspect of it, I think team sports really gets you ready for the real world because at the end of the day, you're going to be working on a team. No matter what kind of company you're working for, you're going to be working with a team. You may not always connect, like, or want to work with those individuals, but at the end of the day, they're your team. And the common goal of that team is to win or is to hit a certain number. So you've got to learn to work with these people and figure out how do you lean into their strengths and focus on that versus the things that you don't like. And that's really, I think, so impactful for team dynamics. And I think that's what is so great about our junior staff. Is that they're learning to overcome these challenges. And we have some dynamics right now where it's like we had these three young women that worked for us, and one of them is no longer in this little group. But you would never know that these two don't get along because they both work on my front office team. But they, at 14 and 15 years old, are so professional that they come in and do the job. They do, you would never know that these two were besties and are not now. So I think team sports just allows you the skills to be able to work together and in tandem with people throughout your lifestyle. And I think that goes for Even our adults, I think that these kids sometimes are more mature than some of the adults that work for us because sometimes they just butt heads and they can't overcome their differences. And I think that's super important if you're going to be on a team because, in the day, everybody needs to be working together and moving forward. And we spend a lot of time working on team building, communication. And I know that we didn't talk about the personal development and all the things that we do to build the team and the leadership styles, but a lot goes into that as well.
Well, that's because we don't ever have enough time. These conversations can go on for hours. But where's the best place for people to connect with you and get your book, your brand, your business, your website, social media? What drop that for me?
So the easiest way is musiccompound.com if you want to find out anything about music. You can get my book, Stroke It, on Amazon. That's the best way to get the book directly to your mailbox. That will lead you to my website, my podcast, and it's available. I think it's like $19.99 online, and it's just a great resource, and that'll allow you to connect with me too. I'm on all the social platforms, Music Compound, or my first name, middle name, and last name, which is Jenny Allday with one L, and then Townsend. And I'm sure you'll have links in the show notes as well. But I would encourage anyone to reach out, especially if you're interested in launching a business or you're interested in finding balance within your marriage. And if you started a company, I love working with entrepreneurs and I love working with people that basically want to start a business. It can be very rewarding, but it comes with a lot of challenges and obstacles, and not everybody's cut out for it.
Not everybody's cut out for it. If anyone that is listening and is cut out for this and they're building a business or a brand, but they feel pulled in a bazillion different directions, what would you say to them in a few words to help them find clarity?
I would hire a coach, hire a mentor.
Yeah.
I have spent thousands of dollars on coaches and mentors, and there are so many things and so many, there's just so much value in somebody else that's already been through it that can provide you experience. And a lot of my mentors have been soundboards and that have coached me. And some of them are professional coaches, some of them are business and professional. Like I had one guy, he's always on call if I need anything. And when I was going through my marriage struggles, I would call and just have some dialogue. And then I'd get back to business. So at the end of the day, everyone's finding balance is really hard. I truly 100% believe that there can be balance. It's about structuring your time and having discipline. I think you can have the best of both worlds. And there's going to be times where like your personal life is amazing and your professional life is going to be shit and then it's going to rotate. But I do feel like there is a way to have the best of both worlds. It just takes a lot of discipline and understanding what your priorities are. And for me personally, at this season of my life, my marriage is a priority, my health is a priority, and my own happiness is number one because the better I am, the better I can be for other people.
It is your priorities, I agree with that, but it's also your values in terms of what do you believe in, how do you want to show up in the world, what are you passionate about? And I think a lot of people don't. I don't think a lot of people, especially the ones that I work with, have, and when we do the values exercise, they're blown away at what they actually are passionate about, things that they actually can latch on to. I don't know that a lot of people have spent some time really organizing that area of their life to understand who is it, who am I? What do I want out of this world? When it's all said and done, if I could wave my magic wand, what does that look like? And then start reverse engineering that from where I would like to be and all the little things that I need to do to get there. And I think that a lot of times that people don't take the time to do that. They just, I'm going to make this big, juicy, you said 135, but 25 years from now, I want to be like living on a beach and have a boat. And I was like, that's great. But what about all those little things in between? What has to happen before you can get there? There's all kinds of stuff.
But to the point, a lot of times it's because we've never had the time or the ability to really think about what we want because we've had other people telling us what we need to be
For
doing
sure.
or how we're going to do it or what we should be doing. We've never had the freedom really to look within and make those decisions for us because somebody else has always been dictating that, whether it's having a family and having to pay bills and go get a job or you had your parents telling you you need to do this as well.
Do you want to have children?
No, I've never wanted to have children.
No, it's interesting. I don't say that you should or shouldn't. I don't have any value metrics on that. I'm just curious.
My parents spent so much time, energy, money into us, and my
Yeah.
parents sacrificed everything. And my parents' marriage failed not once, but twice. And it's because of a lot of things that they were going through, and because my parents had so many businesses, but we also had not like a bunch of debt, but my parents were always providing and always wanted us to have everything they didn't have. And they never spent time alone and they never did anything for themselves. And I really feel like that probably scared me. And at that point, when I saw all of that, I just through the whole divorces, it was really tough.
Yeah.
But I saw a lot at a really young age. And at that point, I knew I did not want to have that life. And I'm really grateful that I didn't. My husband and I have a beautiful marriage and a beautiful life, and we travel a lot. And we don't even have a dog. So we are just just spending time, just being together and doing all the things. This world is a beautiful place, and I want to encourage everyone to go see it and make the choices that you can. So I'm really grateful we don't have children, and I think it's amazing that people do have children. I just never really wanted to have children.
On that note, I'm going to go ahead and say goodbye. I appreciate you taking the time to join us on the Brand Laboratory, Jenny, and really great to hear your story. All of the information about where to find you, you're right, it will be listed in the show notes. Thanks for being here today. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You as well. Thanks. If this conversation sparked something in you, please DM me, tag us, hit me up on social. Any questions you have about it? If you have a guest that you think would make a great show, or sorry, if you have a friend or a colleague that you think would make a great guest on the Branding Laboratory, can you please share them with us? The whole point is to get to know people and share your version of the world and how you built your business or how you view the world or what your philosophies are. And if you have a unique disposition or position around that and you think it could inspire, educate, or do something to make someone's life better, you have a social and moral obligation to share that. At least that's what I think. Anyhow, if you are looking for branding or you need some help building your personal brand, holler at me. I'm happy to have a conversation with you, learn a little bit more about you and what you're trying to accomplish, and see if there is not some bandwidth I can add to your little recipe cookbook. Thank you for listening. I know you have a lot of choices when it comes to podcasts. I appreciate your ears and your eyes on this one today. I will see you on the next episode. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon.